okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Blown up by Stacks and Jacks. Come tomorrow. We got Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down 62. Yeah, 62. NASDAQ Futures down 300. This is actually sort of an odd story that's got more legs to it than just a quick hello. I think we have Mr. Bill Moriarty with us this morning. We're also going to have Mr. John Flanagan later, and we'll have Nancy as well. So big show this morning, as Ed Sullivan used to say. Of course, Ed Sullivan's dead, but that's what he used to say. Big show.
Back in the day.
I can't quite say the big like he did, kind of the New York thing, but Mr. Bill, we have you, bud.
I can hear you clear, Tom. Thanks.
So how are you on this bright day? You managed to dodge all the nasty Chicago weather, but how's the weather down there? You guys are supposed to have hurricanes or not hurricanes, tornadoes your way.
Nothing like that, but they're concerned about the triple digits earlier than ever. So around here, everybody gets a little worked up when it gets real hot this early in the year.
Didn't they have like a 100 and something in Phoenix like 3-4 weeks ago or something?
Could have, yeah. And we're not quite as warm as they are, but I'd say everybody around here is a little skittish about high temperature and lack of water, which we've talked about before.
Yeah, well, how come you don't have like a place next to the bushes up in Kennebunkport? Oh, by the way, I think Obama's spot out on Nantucket or wherever the other place is on the hook, is out there for several $1 million. Why don't you pick that up? You could have us up there for the summer.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. That's a great idea.
gotta have somewhere to go. It is somewhat interesting. I don't know if you're, but you know, you engineer kind of guys, professors like on Gilligan's Island, you know all this about all this stuff. It does seem to be, you know, and this is not. I don't know if it's, who knows if there is such a thing as global warming, or if there is, whether it's because of the guy next door using a gas mower or not. It does seem like the tornado belt has moved a little further south than it used to have been, at least the last few years. If you were a tornado chaser, you used to be in Kansas and Nebraska. Now it seems like you're down a couple of hundred miles. Is that just me?
Well, I kind of remember, Tom, when you were in high school, the little tornado walked by your house.
Oh, yeah. It hit your club, Beverly Country right. Club. That's where Bill used to caddy. Actually, where we moved, where we used to play, where you remember me living in high school, where we used to play ball and stuff, that was right in the path. That we used to live further south than that. And I have sort of an odd animal story regarding that. We had this dog, you know, this mutt that my uncle gave us, and he was a serious mutt. Back when they weren't all mixed or something, it wasn't a cockapoo or something, he was just a plain old mutt. I remember when that thing came by us, and they were talking about tornadoes that had already touched down in Oaklawn. It hit Oaklawn High School. It tore up that rug place on the corner. Remember Olson Rugs?
Right.
And then it kind of bounced along. And when it went by, I remember the dog just all of a sudden, the look on his face. I mean, dogs aren't all expressionful, but he just, it must have been the barometric pressure was so low, he just freaked out. And before then, he could care less if it was storming or anything. After that, if there was a piece of drizzle, he was a shaken puddle on your lap. He was so afraid of that storm, it didn't even come near us. I guess it's the barometric pressure, isn't it? I mean, what else do you suppose he could have sensed?
I would go with that. And I kind of put that tornado in the category of, as a kid at least, the two greatest weather events I ever saw on the south side of Chicago were, of course, that tornado, which I wasn't actually in the middle of it, but I saw a lot of the damage, and the snowstorm in 1967. Yeah. That was something else, too.
Well, the country club that I mentioned that Bill worked at, when it's still there, it's Beverly Country Club. Chicago's kind of an odd. It's pretty flat, except the highest points in the city are right where that country club is. So the highest point in the city is, what, like two blocks away or something? You know, it's not that high, but it's the highest point in the city. Well, the tornado kind of clipped. It didn't take down the club. It took down the dining room, right, and kind of wrecked the pool. But then, and then it just bounced along all the way to the lake and never really touched down again.
For a good year, we were, had portable bathroom facilities, and it definitely tore up facilities at the club. But I think the clubhouse itself was relatively unscathed, but it was on the other side of the street where they had the pro shop, the caddy shack, all that stuff. That was pretty destroyed.
It did hit the dining room, the part that stuck out.
You might be right, because
But it didn't like whack right into the clubhouse. You're right. It was kind of that's the oddest part. You see the pictures from Tennessee or Kentucky? There's a guy with his house looks like it went through a grinder, and the guy next to him's up.
Right.
I mean, it is about as selective as it gets. But anyway, that whole thing appears to be moved south a little bit. But hey, I have a question for you. This kind of up your alley, and I guess maybe used to be up my alley a little bit too. When you, of course, I get a haircut Saturday morning, and the guy starts talking to me about the new Air Force One, and I'm like, chill on that a little bit, because that thing is never going to be Air Force One. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, first of all, Air Force One is probably one of the most complicated pieces of machinery there is in the world. It's designed for a whole bunch of people to stay in the air for like a really long time if they have to. So it has in-air refueling. It has, I'm sure, freezers full of chow. It has an operating room. It's got like everything up there. I said, the retrofit on something like that, plus nobody's going to trust these guys to not have a listening device or a bomb on there, so they're going to take it apart piece by piece. I said, I read that just the ability to put refueling capability in the thing is about a 2.5-year project. And the guy's looking at me like I got five heads. He goes, you mean the guy can't just get in it and go? I said, no, you can't do that. Technically, you could lose a bet, I know, Bill. If he went for a ride in it for an hour, it would be Air Force One while he's in there, right? Because if he's in a Piper Cub, it's Air Force One, correct, the president?
I think that's right.
So, but I mean, the idea of this being able to, the ones from Boeing were originally, what, $3.6 billion for two of them. And they were already complete. I think they were the end of the passenger plane thing. They were already intended for somebody else, and they got basically snuck out of line by the Defense Department, whoever does that. And it's been, now they're up to 5-point-something billion, and it's way behind schedule. I guess the question I want to ask is, we talked about it last week a little bit regarding, upgrading the military and so forth. When you have all these combinations of companies and stuff, if you were to go back into the business tomorrow and wanted to put a water treatment plant together, I think about me if it was a rail car. Are the people who used to make the trucks and make the all those things, are they all still in business? I mean, your supply line. If I'm sure there's a whole bunch of parts that go into a water treatment plant that have to be a 2- and 3-year procurement part. Are the people even around that used to do it? I mean, is everybody? How would you start? I mean, could you even start after being off this long?
Oh, what you're seeing in the world of water treatment is a significant upgrade in the technology, and the way they treated water there on the lakefront in Chicago, which was a fairly simple process. Anybody building a new water treatment plant now is going to install membranes, and they take everything out of the water. I mean, nothing can get through, to the point, as one of the final steps of the treatment process, you have to put some minerals back in to the water because it's so purified.
So it's like distilled water, which doesn't do anybody any good.
And there you go. But it's water. And you're seeing, and needless to say, if you're talking about desalinization, these membranes are capable of that as well. They are not cheap, but I would think that anybody in the water treatment business, any city that was starting out new, would be very wise to go to this latest technology. It's very well proven. It's you know, we've done it hundreds of times now. It's not, you know, an experiment. And I think that's where they will go. And that technology is readily available. There's plenty of people that can manufacture membrane units of all different kinds.
Well, but just in general, though, I mean, you and I were went out to Hoover Dam together, and what if somebody says, well, geez, that particular, what do you call the thing that spins around, like, turbine, that particular turbine looks to me like it's getting a little long in the tooth. What do you call Westinghouse and say we need a new one? What's the delivery, 3 years?
Could be, yeah. Some of those massive things, they're all custom. There's nothing on a shelf like that. So, yeah, you're talking about somebody building it from scratch. So that, but again, those kind of projects, the rehabilitation of the Hoover Dam or the initial building, everybody understands those are decades-long deals, and all of that kind of equipment that you described is going to take a long time. And typically an owner who's buying those, let's say turbines or any kind of exotic piece of equipment, while they're being made, and let's just say it takes 4 or 5 years to make it, the owner will send his own inspectors to whatever factory or whatever place these things are in, and on a regular basis watch it being built to make sure that the castings are the right quality, make sure all the wiring is the right gauge and grade, and on and on and on. And I mean, if they're doing it right, and those kind of the bigger organizations, they do things, you know, right. So that would take a long time, but I would not be surprised if you went out to Hoover Dam today and asked about that. They'd probably say, well, you know, they're scheduled for replacement in 10 years. They probably have some replacement schedule figured out.
Really? Because, I mean, the thing that concerns me a little bit is whenever you see stuff happen, you wonder if anybody has any idea what the repercussions are in this day and age. Bill, I mean, not everybody thinks like an engineer, let's put it this way, these days. When Lou and Mike Murphy comes on, we talk about, you know, the upgrade in the military, and how we're spending a lot of money on a lot of this, and there's new stuff, and then there's more of the old stuff, and how many artillery shells we've, you know, given or loaned or whatever to Ukraine, and how we're, you know, we get 10 of these missiles delivered a month, and by the way, we just shot off 400 of them in the last year, those kinds of things. And then Lou sent us this list. If I can find it, I'll send it to you. When we were Utes, how many companies were in the military aerospace kind of business, and how many of them are all been bought up by somebody else? And you wonder if the division is, you know, if anybody's even running it or anything. I mean, you talk about all these places that used to be go-to places for, like a lot of them, Lou says, are still kind of mom-and-pop places that make bullets and stuff. But you kind of wonder, is your procurement system there? We call up and say, you know, this number is disconnected on something you bought 10 years ago.
I certainly couldn't speak to the military side of things, but water and wastewater treatment technology, there's plenty of it available. So I would not be concerned about that. I mean,
so there's not only like one or two companies now you go to, they still have.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of consolidation, but that's just been the trend for 50 years. I mean, all the people in all these businesses have decided to buy each other out and get bigger. I think the one thing that I hear about more lately about the water treatment industry is the lack of workers, that as these guys that are like our age are retiring as maintenance mechanics, and there's not a robust roster of people behind them. And to the point, if I remember the story correctly, a sanitary district, what they're doing is when they change a pump impeller, they're making a video of it where a professional video to show, well, here's how we're going to upgrade this equipment, and here's how we do it, and you take off this bolt and you do this and you use this wrench. And so they have some record because so many people are retiring and they don't have the knowledge base to maintain a lot of the equipment. And it's you know, people are not that interested. I probably said this before, that younger people, if you gave them a choice, hey, would you like to turn wrenches for the rest of your life or do something on a computer? There's not even a hesitation. They all want to be computer people. And at some point, you got to have people turn a wrench, and not as many as they used to have.
Well, I actually wanted to, we kind of teed this up a couple of weeks ago, because Bill is from the South Side, and obviously the same, roughly the same age as me, and well, must be pretty close since we're in the same grade.
Yes.
The when you know, we have a president who wants to bring stuff back to this country, a lot of manufacturing stuff, and I don't really have an issue with that, especially the stuff that we kind of need, and plus, you know, there's some demand in that. My nephew is in the business now where they got one of these metal companies, Bill, that kind of supply other people parts and stuff when their stuff goes out. And, you know, all those companies that are still around are real busy, because there is a little bit of an uptick in some of the stuff. Plus, like you say, the stuff is just old. I mean, they do a lot of work for Tootsie Roll. The Tootsie Roll's only plant is here in Ford City. You know, they make like 1 million pieces of candy a day. He goes, the tour of that plant is unbelievable. Anyway, but they have this machine will go out, this conveyor belt to go out, and they constantly have stuff being done. I mean, how much of it is, you know, part of it, maybe people don't want to get dirty. How much of it is a leftover from just a bad taste in your mouth of places like Pullman, where there were three generations that worked there, and all of a sudden everybody either got laid off, the places went somewhere else, you're 45 years old with a certain skill set, and now you don't have a job. And, oh, by the way, probably they stole your pension from you, or a few places did. A lot of people in Inland got their pension stolen. It's just a really bad taste in your mouth where everybody our age would say, my kid's never going to work in a place like that. He's gonna be an accountant where the place gets taken over or something, or he gets canned, he can go to another place. Everything he does is going to be, his skill set's going to be transferable. He's going to have some education to fall back on. And, by the way, he doesn't have to get dirty, you know, or whatever, he or she. But some people like that. I mean, a lot of people want to be engineers. Most people find a day in a water treatment plant a lot more fun than a day sitting at a desk. I mean, I think I would if there was one around and I had the skill set. But the fact is, I guess my question is, how much of it is just people have this horrible taste in their mouth that, yeah, maybe Trump or somebody is successful at getting stuff back here for 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden the next guy says, I love China, and it's back on again. I mean, how much of it is just not seeing a future after what happened to a whole generation? How much of it is just not wanting to do it? Could you put a percentage on that?
Well, I think that it's probably, you know, a lot of people that were in those blue-collar jobs, you know, it was their mission in life to rescue their children from that. And they, you know, and guided them and talked to them and said, you know, you got to go this pathway, you got to go to college, and you got to get a degree, and you got to get a good job, and everything was ascendancy. And but I don't disagree with your thinking there that, you know, some people could have seen an unhappy ending at an industrial facility and said, we're never going to go back there. But I think the thing I'm concerned about, and I've heard these statements about, we're going to bring all the manufacturing back, I think they're going to have a tremendously difficult time finding people to do a lot of that stuff. You know, the thing I've seen on TV where they talk about people to put those tiny screws in the cell phones.
Yeah.
I think you could say that you want to do it, but go ahead, build a factory, and then put your help wanted sign out and see how many people line up to do it. I think the Chinese are kind of good at that stuff, and they do not mind being sweated.
Well, they have no choice either.
Yeah, I mean, I told you a story. I romped around there for a couple of weeks a few years ago, and they're hard workers. You know, they don't ask a lot of questions. You give them the job, they're going to do it. And so I think it sounds good. I've heard that there's 500,000 manufacturing jobs sitting open right now in the U.S. So we've sort of got some positions available now that we can't fill. So adding to that backlog, I'm not sure how smart
that is. I think there's a, well, maybe I'm talking a little pompous here, but there's a huge difference in my mind, because I'm, you know, I'm half blue collar to start with, of getting a degree like yours in building a water treatment plant, and being a welder at Pullman, and the next day saying we're not doing cars anymore. See ya. I mean, I'm saying, I mean, you, if you had to, could take two classes in accounting and be an accountant. I mean, you've got the, you can shift. You never had to, but you could. Or somebody, I mean, hell, if I was a civil engineer and I'm building a bridge, boy, I'd love that. Just the idea that when I was done, there was a bridge that I was a part of. But that's not kind of what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, people who are willing to put their trust in a place. I'm going to be here for 35 years. I'm going to retire. I mean, Audrey's dad, he was at, I think he was at Ryerson, I'm not sure, that became Inland. And I don't know what the hell happened to Inland, Bill, but somewhere along the line, somebody raided the pension fund, and when they got bought, the plant manager, because I think Audrey's dad was, he could have retired a few years before, and he said, you know, Elmer, if I were you, I'd take my retirement right now, because this is looking a little wobbly for retirement stuff. And I don't know what kind of game they pulled, Bill, but I know they pulled the same kind of game at Ream. Those guys used to be at, what, 76th and Kedzie, remember those guys?
Right.
They pulled the same kind of game, and he got his full pension, but his people that hung in, his friends that hung in there, I think they're all getting their dough from the government. Somehow Inland bailed, and the pension fund was broke, and how the hell you did that after, you know, CDs were paying 13% for 10 years? I mean, you really had to raid the damn thing. But, I mean, I, for any of those people, for if they ever want their kid in a position like that, is like never, you know, when you don't have anything to fall back on. Now, you know, if you're a... If you've got an accounting degree in your back pocket and you're doing taxes and stuff on weekends, I guess, okay. I mean, if you get canned from your welder's job, you got something to fall back on. But I don't think part of it is people that want their kids in a place like that, but they also part of it is they don't want them without any flexibility either. And I can't put my finger on how much percentage is which.
I think it's a very valid point. I think a lot of people have kind of shunned a lot of those manufacturing skills because of the instability, and just saying.
Well, I mean, look at how many people lived in Janesville, Wisconsin forever. Was that a Chevy plant or Olds plant? All of a sudden, well, they're gone. Well, okay. I read, when it first happened, Bill, I was doing the show, and I read about how many shuttered places there were, breakfast places and things like that, on the main street in Janesville when the plant shut down. And what is it? When you guys would come to an area, when I say you guys, we'll go to break here in a minute, but when you guys would come to an area, the average lead time for a plant, I remember you telling me this when we were young, from a day a guy says we're going to start this water treatment plant till the day it's done, is it what, 5 years?
Six? Yeah, it's about that. By the time you do the studies and figure it out, kind of understand how big it has to be and what the future expansions need to be, and so you have to figure out how big a piece of land you need to acquire, and where, make sure it's safe from flooding and other problems, etc. And then, you know, get into developing the design, and then of course bidding the job out, and then having the guy build it, and then there's a process at the end called the turnover, where contractors built this thing and his job is to turn it on with us watching him turn it on.
Well, after a break, how about, like, kind of walking us through this, because Jan will be on, he'll have some questions too. How does the people flow go? I mean, there's got to be a lot of people working there, and where do they all go? Where do they live? What happens to them? SP Futures down 66, NASDAQ Futures down 327. I'm going to explain that as well here, because this number came out actually right after the close on Friday. So somebody's, this downslide was already there and wasn't counted Friday. It's kind of weird the way I'll talk about that after the break. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I am also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
I don't mind a parasite. I object to a cut rate one.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Byrne, the ever imaginative Matt Byrne on the board. By the way, Matt, you know, from that line from Casablanca, yeah, allegedly out of the 100 greatest movie lines of all time, there's like 11 of them for that movie.
I will say, you know, on the air before we've talked about it, I never saw it before. I just saw it for the first time in the last couple weeks.
I'm going to say you have to see it two or three more times to really, the photography and the black and white.
Yeah.
Is you have to almost know the spots where the you'll see shadows on people you never see the first time that were all part of the photography.
Definitely, yeah. No, there's a lot. I could tell you could, you know, you're gonna get more out of it seeing it more times.
How did you like it?
Oh, it was pretty good. I mean, it was different than I thought it would be, but yeah, it was a good film.
You ever see a better looking lady than her?
Ingrid Bergman.
Yeah. Bergman.
Bergman. Yeah. Very pretty. Yeah.
S&P futures down 67. NASDAQ futures down 336. Dow futures down 264. Okay, now careful with this because Friday, I'm going to say that we have it up. Friday we were up 41 in the S&P, 98 in the NASDAQ. Now that's the cash settlement price. This number from Moody's came out at like 305. So the futures already dropped the 40 points. So we're down. So if you actually looked at the futures, you saw us unchanged or actually a little down on the day. So the minus 68 you're seeing now is what happened after the close on Friday, plus another 20. So we didn't actually finish up 41 in the futures. We did in the cash. I think you got to be careful about some of this stuff. And, you know, that's why when you're trading by yourself on your own and you don't see this stuff, you can be wandering down a road you don't want to go through. DAX down 24. These guys aren't down very much because also Moody's is the last one of the three major credit agencies to lower the U.S. And they dropped us from A, to A, 1. So we're one notch above the best, below the best, sorry. Still, you know, some would say, as a matter of fact, the Secretary of Treasury is, they're late on this. Okay, fine, that's a great line, Secretary of Treasury. But the idea is not to go down, but we're going down on our ratings anyway. DAX down 23.1%, FTSE down 42.5%, CAC around down 53.7%. So nothing kind of major there. Like I said, they were the last people to do this. Nikkei down 255, that's 0.7%. Hang Seng down 12, call that flat. Shanghai up 12 cents, call that flat. So it's not rocking the rest of the world very much. Bonds, now here's where you got to be careful. The bonds are up 12 basis points, 4.56. And I'm going to say we might get the 5% on the 30-year today. If we do, it's not a huge technical number, but it's a number that raises an eyebrow. And also, when you're talking about the amount of financing the government's doing on a daily basis, it's a problem. Crude down 62 cents, 61.87. Brent down 68 cents, 64.94. So again, oil's not going anywhere. Gold, however, up 59 bucks, getting back a big chunk of what it was down last week. It's up to 32.46, nowhere near to 34 something it was, but going that direction. Silver up 41 cents, 32.76. Foreign exchange, the dollar is a little bit lower. As the pounds, euros back up to 112.6, almost making it back to the 113 where it was for a while. British pound up a basis point to 1.34. So the dollar's getting kind of creamed a little bit. Crypto down 1,100 bucks, 103.064. Boy, a lot of stuff there, man. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Boy, the stocks really suck.
Oh, yeah. Not too good. We'll get into that in a little bit. It's currently 6:38 a.m. on May 19th, 2025. Let's get into traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to the Jane Byrne Interchange is currently at 42 minutes, outbound at 29. Meanwhile, inbound on the Dan Ryan from 95th to the Jane Byrne Interchange at 18 minutes, outbound at 10. Weather in Chicago, 46 degrees at Midway and 43 at O'Hare, high of around 57 degrees today with cloudy skies. Tonight, breezy with a chance of showers and a low of 48. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 68 degrees right now. Today, warm with lots of sun and a high of 95 degrees. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs played against White Sox at Wrigley. Cubs won 6-2. This marks the Cubs' 15th win to their 10th loss compared to the Sox 21st loss and only 5 wins. Cubs back tonight against the Marlins at 5:40 p.m. Sox will play the Mariners at 6:40 p.m. Diamondbacks won a close game against the Colorado Rockies, 1-2-0. Meanwhile, in the NBA semifinals, yesterday, West semifinals, Game 7 saw Thunder beat Nuggets 125-93. Finals pick back up on Tuesday with the Timberwolves against the Thunder. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Evidently, do we have Mr. John?
We do indeed, yeah.
You do.
We have John and Bill. Bill, I think you were a Sox fan. The latest is that they are thinking about a mass there, yeah. Celebrating the... I'm thinking that team needs a full novena. What do you think?
I think offer indulgences to the crowd, you know, to get them in their big numbers.
Remember those?
I was thinking exorcism.
I watched some of the games Saturday, and usually the announcers are not, you know, they're kind of milquetoast these days. I don't think Harry Curry would get a job these days. But Jim DeShays says on Saturday, he goes, well, when you, I think the Sox, I can't remember, they walked 8 or 11 guys. He goes, when you walk 8 people and you have 3 misplays in the field, you know, sometimes at this level, it's not going to turn out so well. In the immortal words of Kevin O'Neill, in Little League, it doesn't turn out so well. You do that. That's pretty bad. They and the Rockies are worse. They've only won like 8 games. If you're all drafting out of the same pool, all you have to do is look on, you know, kind of all you got to do is look in the papers who are the best draft. How do you screw up that much where your people aren't even competitive? I mean, you got to almost try. You would think. The Sox have traded away all their best ball players for all these younger guys don't seem to be any good. What am I missing here?
They make it look easy. That's the problem.
God. Anyway, before the break, John, we were going to ask Bill to walk us through the whole, when you put a plant together, and the reason why I ask this, if you put up a, you know, an auto facility, you're going to have a bunch of people there, and you're going to have, you know, however it's going to take you a couple of years to build a damn place and whatever, and get it rolling. But then you're going to have a lot of people employed, and you're going to end up having, I'll use the term, ancillary businesses of you know, gas stations, car washes, breakfast joints, bars, I mean, you name it, all the supply hardware stores are going to go with it, and the people are essentially going to kind of stay there. But I have a feeling, John, put one of these, or John and Bill, one of these water treatment plants up someplace, it's almost like putting a dam up where you end up needing all these people to do it. Then they just all go. And how many people are left working in the place, Bill? I mean, what is the ebb and flow of how that all works? I mean, do you go from no employees to 2,000 back down to 25? Or and how does that, where does everybody stay? Where does everybody, they bring their Winnebagos? Or where does everybody eat? I mean, how does that all work when you put, I know you put a couple of these in areas where there weren't a whole lot of people. You did one in California and a couple other places. How do you get everybody there? Where do they stay? How do they eat? How does that all work?
Well, when you, depending on the complexity of the job, and let's just assume it's fairly complex, in other words, the construction is sophisticated, tricky, dangerous, so you need specialized management. So you're probably not going to be able to find those kind of companies right where you are. So let's say you put a job out for bid, it's a very complicated job, and there's only a half a dozen construction companies in the country that can even bid on it based on their knowledge. So one of them gets the job, and they will definitely move in higher level guys to run the job, and those guys will maybe rent a condo. If there is a condo, they will drag a trailer. There's like little trailer communities that spring up around these things where guys, you know, because they know they're going to be there for 2 or 3 years, but they're not going to be there forever, and they don't want to bring their family around. So they'll get in there. And then in terms of the workers, generally they'll go into the union hall to get carpenters, steel workers, iron workers, all kinds of specialty crafts, if they can get good quality ones. And if they can't, they'll bring those in too. So you could see a job site spring up to, and I've been on a couple of these in my career where every day they open the gate, 600-700 guys poured through to do all kinds of work. And at the end of the day, they all went to some home, some trailer, something. And they were from everywhere, you know, just specialized guys. So as the job gets closer to being finished, the population of the workers goes down and down and down. And then you get into a process called startup. And typically during a startup, you're going to discover some things don't work. So let's just say that $1 million pump that you put in and you try turning it on, and even though it worked at the factory and everything, there's something wrong. So you may have little hot spots like that that you have to correct. And then there's an orderly process called the turnover. It's not an Apple turnover, it's the turnover, where the contractor and his technical support group from all the vendors he bought all this equipment from, they will work with the owner and the owner's staff to teach them how to run this thing. And they'll hang around and be available for about a year, you know, on call type of thing. And again, the contractor's got a warranty on the whole thing. So anything breaks, he's got to come back, and at his cost, he's got to fix. And after about a year, the owner takes over, things are okay, and the contractor's gone. And he finally gets his bond out of it.
Is there any way, and I'll let Jen ask some questions, do you kind of string these together to where if you're putting one in California, then if the same guy has a bid on one in, well, let's say Texas, where you are now, where he tries to string it so that when the guys are leaving the one in California, they can, maybe he can hook on the one in Texas because he wants those same guys? Or now it seemed like the dams kind of went one after another. Got all the guys from Hoover Dam, went to the Grand Coulee Dam, went to something else. Did that just happen randomly, or did people sort of plan it that way?
I think people like to think they can plan that, but I don't think they can. I think it's if it works out, it's a random deal, because there's so much uncertainty, you know, who's going to get the next job and what are the circumstances. But, I mean, clearly a contractor might use that as a little bit of a sales pitch if he goes to an owner and say, you know, we've just done a job exactly like this, so we'd be a reliable choice. They'd certainly say that, but whether that would get him the job or not, it's uncertain.
Do these guys, I mean, when Pullman bid on a rail car contract, Pullman would have to get a performance bond, but since they hadn't reneged on a contract since 1865, I don't even know if they had to pay for it. I mean, it probably did a little bit. How hard is it for, you know, an up-and-coming company to get a performance bond on some massive water treatment facility?
It can be difficult, and sometimes they can't get them and they can't bid the job. That's why they'll do a joint venture with a bigger company, because the bonding company, the one going to issue this performance bond, they're going to look at your performance record, and let's say, A, you're a contractor that's done a lot of lousy work and gotten in a lot of trouble. Well, they know someone's going to come calling that bond, and they're not going to sell it to you.
Is it still the banks that do that, or is it other people? Are they bonding companies?
Bonding companies, they're called.
Okay, because it used to be banks did it. I mean, they would get the bank. I mean, because, it wasn't that much. Well, it was $60 million, but the bank would just do that, I think.
We always referred to them as bonding companies, not banks.
Okay.
But the other thing is the size and complexity. Let's say you're a real good contractor, and you've built a whole lot of sidewalk in the city of Norridge, Illinois, and you've done an excellent job, but you haven't demonstrated you've stepped up in class to take on a complicated process project, no one's going to bond you. They're going to say, yeah, we don't know enough about you. And that's why these firms, they go into joint ventures. They'll find a big contractor and team up with, and the big contractor, one of his jobs will be to bond the thing. And get them in. And then sometimes through that process of joint venturing on bigger jobs, the little contractors kind of gain strength and eventually become standalone.
John, you have any questions? You've been listening?
Yeah, I know, like in old, you know, going back 100, 200 years probably, it was individual sureties that would back up a lot of these bids. So it would be just, you know, the big boss in town, or the, you know, somebody who owned the bank in the private capacity that could stand a surety for some construction company to get a project done. So if you could curry favor locally with, you know, the town leaders or the politicians, that would be enough. And of course, projects weren't that big in those days either. But I've been digging into this with my family history about, you know, construction work in my dad's family going back into the Dakotas in the 1880s. It's really interesting. It's big news. I mean, the newspapers cover this like every day. So and so.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. You can tell it's pretty important stuff because if you could get a good project and finish it and word of mouth, you know, you get letters, testimonials or whatever to take to your next project. This was kind of survival among all these, you know, one or two person construction firms. And you go in and hire the labor you needed in a town and you had to be fair about it and not to destroy your reputation before you got started. But it's very delicate, you know, kind of timing in a lot of this stuff. And of course, what you're describing today, Bill, is you know, projects that weren't envisioned in the time period I'm talking about, but it's very much the same kind of process.
Bill,
the one thing that when you talk to people in the heavy construction world, I think their biggest problem right now is getting labor. And part of it, and I'll speak from the area that I live in, I would guess that 90% of the laborers, relatively unskilled, are Mexicans. And probably if somebody were really checking, they'd discover they don't have documents. But they're quite good at what they do. But I think in the current climate, a lot of these guys have headed for the hills because they don't want to get arrested and thrown in some supermax prison. So you've really got a limitation on how much you can do because you can't get the workers and you can't get good workers. And I know a fellow here, he's got an attorney that's working full time to get people papers so they can come here and work. But it's a tricky situation, and the response in the marketplace when you have this kind of stuff is the prices go up because less people can bid work, so it's a more select bidding climate, and so all the prices are higher, and prices are just screaming high right now because there's a lot of work. You know, when Biden signed that IIJA bill where he threw billions into water, sewer, all kinds of things, it just super lit this construction industry. And when I talk to contractors, and I don't talk to them that much, but when I occasionally do, are you bidding? I ask this question: are you bidding anything? And that's kind of a leading question, because that's like, do you even have the capacity to put in a bid? Meaning, you've got so much work, you're completely maxed out. And they also, yeah, we're not looking at anything right now. So again, the people that suffer are the owners and the customers, because these prices just go out of sight.
Well, there's got to be some correlation with, unfortunately, I drive around here more than I should. What's happening here is there's all kinds of construction work, and you drive by and there's nobody working. Yet, you know, these jobs are all taking way longer than they ought to. And I guess if you're big enough, you still have the job, you just can string it out. But I got to believe that every one of these things, the Kennedy, I mean, every one of them you look at, if it was 20 years ago, there'd be three times as many people working on it. I mean, it would be my guess, but I don't know that much about it. But I mean, is that possible, Bill?
Oh, I think it's the same everywhere. You're hurting for people, and it would seem to me that somebody ought to get into this and say, you've got these willing workers that happen to live on the other side of the border. Is there not some system that we couldn't get them qualified, because you know they could say, well, you're taking away our jobs. Nobody wants those jobs.
No.
Nobody wants digging a ditch in 110 degrees. The type of people that do that work on a regular basis are just built differently. And
they used to do that here. The I&M Canal was dug by our ancestors, the Irish.
Of course. Yeah, we were glad to do the digging. Didn't have anything else to do. No money.
Yeah, it was a... but you know, some of it is somewhat attitude. My original producer of the show, terrific guy, Matty Weber, when 2008, we just started the show. It was like 2007, 2008, and everybody is, you know, and I was younger, obviously. We all were younger. So all his buddies, they just got out of school, they all get laid off, right? A lot of them were marketing and stuff. I said, well, man, if everybody's hurting, I still have some connections. I used to do, you know, some remodeling work. I said, why don't we go out and tell people we'll paint some houses for them? You know, you guys are going to do the ceiling work, but I'm perfectly capable of teaching you guys how to do this stuff, and after 2 days of instruction, we could be a pretty good group. Oh, we don't want to do that like that. What are you talking about? We can make a couple $100 a piece on a weekend and actually do a nice job. My guys don't want to learn how to paint. I'm like, okay then. it's not a big deal, but it also, painting isn't that hard either, right? You know, it had no interest. I mean, I don't know how much of that is, you know, ingrained in people, but, I mean, Bill, you and I had some pretty crummy jobs when we were in college, as I recall. I mean, I was one of the best gym floor sealers, and I was pretty good at cleaning bathrooms, too, when I was at the school. You know, I'm not so sure I want to do it tomorrow, but, I mean, we all had kind of crummy jobs, didn't we?
I seem to remember crawling around an attic at one of your palatial mansions in Beverly,
yeah,
and working on the roof truss. There's a little place in the back of my mind I remember working on that.
Get a load of this, John. We get this place. I buy this really nice house in Beverly, and I'm, you know, trying to remodel it, and there's this kind of dent in the roof. So I call Bill, who's a structural engineer guy. I go, what the hell's wrong with this roof? And he goes, I don't know. Something must be wrong up there, because it was a slate roof. So we go up in there, and there was a big support brick column. And these guys had this big, you know, what is it, a hip? The big end of the thing that comes in from the corner, is that they call it a hip or something, Bill?
I believe so.
Well, the hip didn't make it to the support. It was right next to it. And that's why it was sinking. It was never on the support. So we ended up having to jack the thing up from the basement and put a huge beam in there. But it lasted forever with a slate roof on there, but it kept sinking a little bit, and they kept fixing the ceiling in the bathroom. At one point, wasn't the plaster like a foot thick or something, Bill? They just kept putting more plaster on.
Piling it on, right.
I'm like, how the hell? Talk about how drunk were those guys? How do you miss the support with the hip? But they did. And the house had to be, 60 years old? It was still standing.
How long did you keep that house, Tom?
A year and a half, 2 years. Robin and her brother lived there all the while he went to med school.
Okay.
And then we ended up selling it, and those guys totally remodeled it. But it was it was quite a place, Jan. It was I don't know how you would design something like that, but it had a gorgeous living room, dining room, and upstairs had three master bedroom suites all with their own bathroom.
Boy, that's...
And the bathrooms were all Art Deco and all this kind of stuff. But it was really something.
That's luxury.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, to this day, talk about stuff we talk about in Stocks and Jacks, the toilets were absolutely silent. When you flush the toilet, you couldn't even hear it if you were next to it. And I haven't seen those ever since then, Bill. I don't know who the hell made those, but they probably used too much water or something. But
oh yeah,
you flush the toilet, it was like, we'd do a nice job flushing the toilet, but it didn't make a sound. Bill, have you ever seen those since?
No, I mean the whole, it used to be. In the old days, it was 7 gallons a flush, and now we're at a little over 1 gallon, all water conservation fixtures.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We need to do a lot more of, but...
Well, some here, Jan, I've been asking Bill questions for a while. What else? I'm fascinated by the whole way that these places, the people go from one place to the other, and it's really quite an industry. One of the gentlemen who works here in the building, in fact, he just went down to a First Communion in... one of the places down in near Dallas, and his daughter and family lives there, and the husband works in the oil fields. It's like 200 and some miles away. So every Monday morning, like six guys get in a car or a van or something, and off they go, and they come back on the weekend. They must be working in the Permian or something. There's still a lot of that going on, isn't there, Bill? I mean, it's where people. I mean, these jobs, they're not. I mean, you're not going to be there 10 years, so you're not going to move the whole family, but you're there 2 or 3 years, and there's probably, four guys in a crummy motel room during a week or something. And you probably got good workers, and they save their dough. And
a lot of these guys that do that regularly, they've got RVs, they just drive them around, set them up. They're quite used to it. They make very good money, and they get back home enough that they keep things going. But, it's purely an economic play. Those guys make very good money to travel around like that and work.
When you have a job, again, I always go back to Bill and I. It was very educational, by the way, going to Hoover Dam with Bill in tow, because you learn a hell of a lot more about the dam, John, when you got a civil engineer standing next to you. How many guys on that job? I'm thinking the foreman who was famous. I forget a guy's name. How many people on the job really understand the entirety of the project?
Not very many.
I can't think. Yeah, I'm sure very few. And you really have no. There's no reason for you to know more than your task in a way, just from an efficiency standpoint. You have to be good at what you're doing and not make mistakes. And then, the crew or the design crew certainly, and the overseers and the construction end of it have to synchronize this. But it's better to have it compartmentalized like a auto assembly plant or something. You never maybe we'll see the final product, but what you have to do is XYZ, and you got to do it right. Keep doing it over and over again, and let that be enough for you.
I mean, it's because I still am pretty fascinated with that thing. Well, maybe because part of it is because Bill went with me, but the last film I saw, Bill, it was how much he had to go into making sure water didn't get under the dam. But that's the biggest problem with that kind of dam is water can get under it. And a lot of the stuff, they didn't even know what they were dealing with till they dug it all out.
That sounds about right.
And how do you do this on the fly? I mean, how smart do you have to be, for God's sake?
Well, people that are in that world, and there's probably, not a lot that really know how to do a dam correctly. They know all the tricks. And there's certain things they can't investigate fully until they're really excavating for the foundation. And so they just know how to do that. And that's a procedure. You know, in the 1800s, it was a very common thing in America to have dams fall down and wash out, you know. People that just didn't know what they were doing. They throw up a dam and the first big flood that would come through would knock it down, and they just got more sophisticated and made things heavier and stronger, and these issues of undermining the structure by water getting underneath, you know, they figured out ways to cut off the water so it would last, and probably had systems to regularly inspect everything, you know, so that they, if they saw any water bubbling up, okay, there's something we're going to deal with, you know, versus what they might have done in the past where they let things go.
When it's a first-time thing, I mean, when something is that massive, how do you know how much the thing is liable to shrink? How much do you know, or expand? How much, I mean, it seems like first time through, is it just that much over-engineered that they have... Or
I think a lot of times they'll make things very, very structurally sound because they don't know. But over time, structural engineers have studied these things, learned by example. They've had a few fall down, and they've done retroactive review of what happened, and so you don't see those kind of failures, dramatic dam failures. You know, have we seen one in the last 20 years? I can't think of one, but, you know, could there be one in the middle of China? You know, it's possible. But I think they've gotten really good at these types of things. But as you go forward, you know, new types of construction beget new problems.
Well, it's interesting. We'll let you go, and Jen and I will talk about, you know, interest rates here in a second. But, fascinating stuff. I mean, I think that this kind of thing, when we can do these kinds of things and we get ourselves lost in some of the petty crap, it just kind of bothers the hell out of me, because we're capable of much better, I think, Bill. I've seen it. You've seen it a million times. Are there any huge treatment projects going on in the country now that are worth noting?
You know, I'm not as close to it since I retired, but I would bet you there are 50 going on all over the place. If you counted brand new plants to expanding older plants, I mean, water is such a precious commodity. As I've mentioned on this show in the past, I think over the next 20 years on the Texas Gulf Coast, you will see 4 massive desal plants to take the salt out of seawater and pump it inland. The money's being arranged for now. People are in the starting blocks. And I think what you'll see that in Florida, California, where they've already done some of it, there'll be a lot of very sophisticated water treatment facilities to get drinking water, because the growth is exploding in this country. I mean, it's not slowing down at all.
Any urge on your part to be a week a month consultant and be involved in it?
You know, I do a little bit of consulting work at right now, which is probably a couple days a week. And occasionally I get calls, but I'm probably not as anxious to go jump in the car and go somewhere for a while.
I can't see it, but I'm saying, just in terms of, you know, the design part or being on the overseas board or something like that, I bet you'd find something like that fun.
Well, I actually serve on board for the city of Austin, what they call the Water and Wastewater Commission, and I've been on it for 13 years, so we're down there every couple of weeks, trying to make sure something doesn't go horribly bad so far.
So down there, a guy like you can actually get on the board, and it's not somebody who knows nothing that has their name up on the expressway for an election?
There's some guys that know nothing, but there's some... what are good board members, I think, are people with a little finance background, you know, that kind of understand how that business works, or an engineer that knows a little bit of the technical stuff. There's some people, another type of board member we see sometimes is a very environmentally sensitive person that wants, let's not destroy the habitat type of people. They have a role in all of it. And so over the years, I've seen different types do a good job.
You don't want any attorneys like Flanagan, though, do you?
We've had some attorneys that have done very well down there, you know, when they get, because we, over the years, there's been some little attorney deals going on, and it's great to have a board member that knows the lingo for sure.
Bill, is the desalination technology, from what I know of it, is just incredible advances have been made. Worldwide, is there any country that stands out that's had huge success with this? Or
Israel is really the leader. I think all of their water is desal, I think. I've never been to Israel. But we've built several in the U.S., and some haven't worked very well. City of Tampa put one up 20 years ago, didn't work. I think there's been some in Southern California, didn't work well. But the two things that have made the technology more appealing is it's gotten cheaper for several reasons. The membranes, they can manufacture them cheaper, and the energy usage has gone way down, so that the cost of the water is still very expensive, but it's within a reasonable realm. And I think as more of this gets done, the prices will get cheaper, people will get better at deploying it, and we'll see. Now, I would not say in the city of Chicago, you're never going to see this, because you've got the one of the greatest freshwater lakes sitting there with no limitation on it, and that's probably not going to. But there could be a reason, like the city of Milwaukee, you know, where they dump their sewage into Lake Michigan and take their drinking water out. They may be looking to go to membranes just for the upgrade of the treatment quality, because you know they've had some episodes up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it had some real serious problems. And of course, Chicago, what they did by reversing the flow of the river, that was one of the greatest public health projects in the history of mankind. I mean, reduce the incidences of typhoid and all the diseases they were having, and just like dramatically dropped it when they reversed the river.
Well, I'll leave you with this fantastic note, Bill, before, hope you're not eating breakfast. Chicago had 300,000 people. I'm actually a reasonable student. I haven't read it in a while, of the Chicago waterways, because I took one of those 8-hour tours, and it's absolutely fascinating. Chicago is really the history of water management. Is really the history of the city, and I mean, you know that better than anybody. But when Chicago had 300,000 people between the tanning factories, the stockyards, and the people, they had more waste. I mean, real waste than any other city in the world, including like London that had 3 million people. They had to deal with. I mean, it was a massive undertaking, and you know, the flow in the Chicago River, even though it was going the wrong way into the lake, well, the right way is the way it was designed. Well, the way somebody designed it, there wasn't enough flow even to get it the hell out of here. So there actually was a pipe and a pump from the lake into the river, like up by Fortin, to pour water into the river just so it would flow faster back into the lake. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't know that, but I'm sure they were doing all kinds of things to get that problem solved.
Well, they ended up using the I&M Canal, which was never designed for it. They pumped crummy water into there to go downstream towards the Mississippi long before there was a sanitary and ship canal. So that thing was all dirty, which it wasn't supposed to be.
Even the North Shore Channel that, you know, runs pretty much straight north and south along McCormick Boulevard up to Wilmette Harbor, that was built, I think, to increase the flow into the North Branch of the Chicago River and downstream. So to this day, that's just a way of making the water flow faster, to get it out of the center of the city.
Well, you know, a river that doesn't flow doesn't do you much good when you pour garbage in it. They actually had, you know, the whole idea that Cuyahoga, the river that burns, Chicago used to have two or three boats at night that just dealt with fire on the water. They just go around and put out these little fires that were all the chemicals in there were all flammable, weren't they, Bill?
There's a whole lot of fiery rivers, yeah. And we've made such, you know, when I think back when I started working in the 70s and we had the Clean Water Act, federal government, I think it was actually Nixon who put the thing through. And we upgraded the wastewater treatment in this entire country in a period of a decade, and did a tremendous amount of good with that money.
Well, just and, As a little aside, Bill's Irish senior ancestors, they actually built, when they're going to reverse the flow of the river to go the other way, right?
Right.
Well, at the time, there were no locks. The waters came flying right out of the lake. It was like a 3 or 4 or 5 mile an hour current. The locks came much later after a Supreme Court decision, but they got, the thing was all dug, and the pictures of it dug before there was water in it, it really something. It's this 200 yard wide, 22 feet deep, or whatever it is, just channel. You look at it, it just goes on forever. Well, the water was all dammed up with all these rocks and stuff, and they never could get permission to actually start it because there was lawsuits from Joliet and all these other places. So one night, all these aldermen and all these city guys get together in some bar, and they're all trashed, and they go, you know what? It's time for us to do this. So they head out, and somebody knew how to get the steam shovels going, and they started knocking down the rocks and stuff that were essentially the cofferdam. All of a sudden, some big glob of crap landed from the old river into the new thing and hit the ground a little more, a little more, a little more, and finally it starts flowing into this thing. And it was, you know, it was downhill to a certain extent, right, Bill? So off it went, and it made it to Joliet, like, you know, a day and a half later or something. And they all tried it. It was the absolute perfect definition of it's better to ask for, you know, forgiveness than permission or something.
Right.
And all of a sudden, once it was rolling, everybody said, well, it's rolling. What can we do about it now? And the weird part, I mean, Bill could go through this for 2 hours, it's dilution, 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 right? And once it got down, you know, past Joliet, there was so much other water that entered it from, like, the, you know, the Fox River and all these other places. It actually wasn't even that dirty. It kind of cleans itself, right? I mean, the bacteria in there cleans it up. If you just go far enough with enough dilution, right?
Well, whether you clean it up, is dilution is probably the right word, what would happen.
Well, if it's biologic, it works. If it's antifreeze, it doesn't, right? Because nobody will eat that, right?
That's true.
Anyway, Bill, as usual, good stuff. When are you off to Ireland?
I'll head there the 4th of July for a couple weeks. I'll be in a little town called Dingle, which is the westernmost point in Europe and Ireland. And I have a little house that I rent from a nice lady in California. And I will probably abuse a couple golf courses while I'm there, and then maybe see a little sightseeing and see what's going on in County Kerry.
How far are you from the nearest bar?
Not far. There's a, I think in the town of Dingle, and which is a town of 1,500 people, I think there are 56 pubs.
John, we got to go, bud.
My kind of town.
Yeah.
Is there room for two more in this place for a couple of days?
There's lots of room.
Uh-oh. Careful with that. We might show up.
Right.
Take care of yourself, buddy. Talk to you before then.
Thanks.
SP Futures down 60, NASDAQ Futures down 305. John, all kinds of news here this morning. Obviously, the move in the market here, it seems bigger than I think it is because it already happened Friday night in my world. I mean, the rest of the world, they think we were up Friday. We really weren't, because I look at the futures, the rest of the world looks at the cash. What do you make of this? I mean, I have to believe we're going to see some pretty big moves up in the interest rates today. Are we going to, if we see 5% in this 30-year, I'm not a big technical guy, but I don't think it's a big technical spot, but I think it's a psychological spot. What do you think?
Yeah, I the thing about the Trump speech last week in Riyadh, which I think was a strategic, you know, move of brilliance. Whoever wrote the speech certainly knew how to write a speech, because it plays to, you know, our would-be allies just as much as it does to our enemies and the people back home. But the idea that, you know, this is going to be the wave of the future. It's no more nation building. This is going to be defense contracting as a way of solving whatever problems we want to get involved in solving. But it's taking it from a very different angle. I hope and I expect it to be good for business generally. Certainly maybe in not in areas of the stock market that we saw to a great extent before, but I think it takes the idea of you know, a national project in a very positive direction. I think this is what our allies, or those we hope would be our allies, want to hear at a time like this, given what else is going on in the world. And I think businesses, too, must be attracted to it. So I'm hoping it signals a kind of sea change. It was a real slap down to the Richard Perles and Paul Wolfowitzes and William Crystals of the world, you know, pretty much were the ambassadors for whatever the U.S. was selling, and what we were selling was often death and destruction. So I'm hoping that this is, you know...
John, how do you... Obviously, the world is awash in, you know, good news, bad news. I sense, you know, we have people when we were, God, we were so damn young, you know, when Kennedy met Khrushchev, you know, he totally, and Kennedy was a pretty brilliant man, totally, you know, overstepped his own personality in a sense that when Khrushchev met him, Khrushchev would somehow change, and I don't think he did. I think Roosevelt got snookered. Probably Roosevelt could be the smartest man we've ever seen in this country in a lot of ways. Certainly his ability to maintain information in his head from every different angle. But he sort of had the same thing with Stalin. He couldn't be that bad. He seems okay to me. I mean, Truman never felt that way about Stalin. He thought he was a thug from day one, and he was, right? The whole idea that you know, Trump has this thing, and it's the way he is. Is we're all kind of in this for business, and if we can get money together and make a deal somehow or another, it's going to trump all the other stuff. Not kind of Trump is in bridge. I don't think his visit over there changes the guy who's the head of you know, the Saudi, from being a cutthroat murderer to something else. I don't see that. I mean, I think the guy is.
And it wasn't just aimed at them.
No, what I'm saying is you got to be careful with this. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because I don't think that you know, Biden made the same mistake with thinking maybe Iran could someday be a decent place. And I think everybody excoriates him for that, and that we see Trump kind of do the same thing. My personality is going to sort of win over these people. You know, we're not going to sell chips to China, but by the way, we're going to sell them to you know, Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to have, you know, 30 guys on the plane that give me money that are going to cut these deals. It's always sort of happened. I kind of know, John, but I don't know that it's been as successful by anybody, by Biden, by Kennedy, by any of these people.
Well, if we could stem the failures of what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, which was to pour money and lives into a situation that nobody was able to explain, to my mind, satisfactorily, and that I think was part of the reason for it.
I'll explain it to you. Oil.
Well, and supposedly, you know, hegemony, you know, to get our people in there first and, you know, control the politics and, you know, the alliances that could be made, and in a sense to buy your way into popularity by just, you know, showing how we're going to do it. And it was a massive failure. The Chinese project was pretty much the same thing on an even, you know, larger and more destructive scale, probably. But I don't think that's what Trump was talking about in his speech, and I would like to kind of keep them separate. Ideally, I mean, if we could stop making the mistakes we made in the past time, or made mistakes with different consequences.
But they're the same mistakes. People pushing for money and influence. I mean, I'm going to say this, and I say I haven't read it yet, but I read pieces of it. John Lee gave me a book. It was America in the Middle East, and, you know, from X year up to probably stopped in the 90s or something, you know, where the guy probably croaked. John, we've been all over that place since the day the first drill went in the ground, and the British were ahead of us, right? But we were kind of right with them. It's all about, you know, it used to be the oil companies ran all this stuff, and now it's like other people, but it's this influence. Somehow or another, we get ourselves involved in this. I don't necessarily, you know, and Trump goes about it as a different way, where at least if we're making deals and making money for our people. But it's sort of the same out in the open crap we used to do for the oil companies. Nothing's changed, has it?
Well, if the deals can be made, we're not the leading edge of it, or we're seeking control, political or economic, in some other place. I think that's what's turned off a lot of allies who could be closer allies than they've been, and to sort of temper the, you know, the reputation we've developed internationally, which is, you know, hardly open doors for us. when push comes to shove. I think a lot of people would see us as just as invasive and controlling as the Chinese were with Belt and Road. That's a bad model.
Well, you know, I don't know that we were ever, just from the stuff, by the way, Jen, we opened up at 5.02 in this 30-year. That's not good news. 30-year, now the yield curve is definitely upward sloping here. And the 10-year rate's up a full tenth of a point, so it's 4.55. So I have a feeling Nancy's not going to be happy when she comes on. It's almost like just the same old story. We seem to be controlled. Whoever is in the White House, seemingly the last however many years, is controlled by these multinational organizations. They're pulling the strings on people, and I don't know if we have anybody here that is going to say stop that. I mean, I don't know. Is anybody powerful enough? I mean, it seems like this NVIDIA. They're going to get their crap to China come hell or high water, you know, and there's nothing seems to be going to stop them, and they have enough money to give to anybody. I'm not saying they're just giving it to Trump. They'd give it to anybody. I mean, I don't know that every man, you know, I don't know what percentage of the power we ever had in Washington, but it seems to me it's on a low ebb. Or where am I wrong with this? I mean, every president has been pushed around by these guys to some degree. The Bushes were pushed around by oil, right? I would think. Most people would sort of agree with that. Where do we get a voice here, ever?
Well, the less we use the defense industry, you know, or munitions, you know, producers for our calling cards, the better.
But the budget's going up this year, the biggest increase in forever in defense this year. So where are we cutting back on that? I don't care about the speech. I'm looking
using
at the numbers.
As ambassadors, Tom. Yeah. This was the only beneficiary from the adventures in Iraq and Afghanistan, I think, were the defense industry and our
Vietnam
enemy.
Too. Vietnam, well, yeah, you name and, it. And, yeah.
I'm not saying we don't need a defense, you know, expenditure or budget, but what we've done is squander money that could have been more strategically spent in this side of the country with jobs and not just in weapons. It doesn't have to be in weapons. This is what we pushed, and I mean, the naked, you know, appeals to the population, the war rhetoric of, you know, the early 2000s and the nuts stuff with the, you know, the Patriot Act and the outflow of garbage from the Twin Towers attack and everything else that happened that day has yet to be calculated fully. And nobody wants to really draw the bottom line on what we lost by thinking we could fix the problem the way we did. Because we turned our backs on the veterans. We turned our backs on the families that were destroyed by not just the events of 9/11, but, you know, the way we wasted money after that.
Well, how many people are still?
I'd like to see an end to that.
How many people who worked at 9/11 are dying early because of all the stuff that they inhaled?
That's what I mean.
We still don't admit that it's a problem.
And who cares about them in Washington?
Yeah,
nobody. You know? I'm saying this is what we bought into when we have idiots, you know, running the Defense Department, and we had, you know, Cheney as this monstrosity as the vice president, and Bush as this idiot, you know, supposedly the figurehead. I mean, that's one of the most disgusting episodes of geopolitical history that I can think
of. If there was a little Jan Flanagan who's your grandkid, when his grandkid grows up to be our age, are we still going to have 60,000 people shoving things up your behind at the airport to check if you got a bomb in there or what?
Well, I'd like to see that go the other direction. I don't know how soon that will happen. What a waste. What a complete waste.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm against anybody, you know, walking through a metal detector or anything like that, because the state of the world is a little weird now, but...
Well, the real ID phenomenon, Tom, is, you know, another problem.
What is the purpose of that?
Control. Information control. Why do I have to give my birth certificate and four other pieces of identification to the state of Illinois, who already has enough of my stuff to give me a driver's license? I've had a driver's license since I gave my birth certificate in 1969. Do I need to give them again to the state of Illinois?
Let me ask you, what do you need? It's been so long. What do you need to get a passport?
You need a birth certificate, your proof of your residence. If you are naturalized citizen, you need evidence of that. You have to, you know, swear you've never had a passport issued.
If I move, I don't have to notify. I don't have to get a new passport.
No, they tell you to pencil in your current contact information with the expectation that it will change over the 10-year life of the passport. So, you know, I put my home address on my passport, but, you know, I moved in between. You don't issue a new passport.
No, you don't. So how is it that the passport is good and yet your old driver's license isn't?
Well, what would a real ID have made different on 9/11 or anything since then, Tom? Absolutely
nothing.
Absolutely nothing. So you tell me what's behind it. It's all about, you know, getting more or reunifying.
But it's not the state of Illinois. They've been fighting against it for 10 years.
Yeah, but it's caved now. So
well, they refuse to give them another extension. The Fed did. The federal government did. The state asked for one.
Well, I have no intention of getting one. And anybody who asks me an opinion on whether to get one or not, I would say absolutely not.
Well, I would
better
say
to
that.
Get a passport. I mean, if you need to fly, a passport is a lot more useful than a real ID or a driver's license.
Well, that's why I asked about the passport. The only thing I would say, Jen, it's enough of a pain in the ass to go get the new driver's license. If you get the thing in the mail to go get your new driver's license, actually you can use that as your proof of where you live, believe it or not. So I got my real ID like 3-4 years ago, just when I had to renew my driver's license. I didn't make a special trip. And it wasn't all that painful because there wasn't many people doing it at the time. But I had to bring a stack of stuff, and then they kind of give you your old driver's license back with a stamp on it saying that it's still good for a while. And they faxed, that's how long ago it was, they faxed all this stuff down to Springfield, copied a passport, and I had one utility bill, and then the thing they sent me, and I think I dug out a birth certificate. And then they, all of a sudden, 3-4 weeks later, I got the thing in the mail with the little, was it the gold star in it or something? It was somewhat painless at the time, but I would recommend to people, I don't usually give recommendations, that if you're going to go get it, if you need to get your passport renewed, pony up to $25 and get the little passport card, because that's a real ID.
Yeah, or the passport book, either one.
Well, what I'm saying, the card's much easier to carry if you're just going domestically. You know, here's the weird part. You can use the passport card to drive to Toronto. If you fly, you need the full passport. Why is that?
Well, I think that you have to go through customs with it, and there are places to stamp your entry and departure. So,
I mean, you got to go through customs theoretically going across the
bridge. Yeah, it's done electronically today anyway. I mean, they can scan. This is in a database, but I get, you know, I've gotten physical stamps, you know, when I traveled in and out of foreign countries.
Well, I've had people that live in the garden apartment, John. Let's just say, the lights for the building come off the electric from the garden apartment. You know, they got to come off somewhere, right? So I've never let anybody who lived down there pay the gas or the electric for fear if they didn't pay, all of a sudden we'd all be in the dark.
Good move.
So they don't have any. There's no bill coming to their place. How would they ever get one of these IDs?
Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, it's a labyrinth you got to go through. Plus, one of the things I don't think anybody really thought about or cared about, or certainly talked about, but if you don't have, you know, a certified copy of your birth certificate, and maybe you had one at one time, and I had one that ended up in shreds, you know, 30, 40 years after I'd used it enough times.
Is that the neighbor's dog?
You pay another 15, 20, whatever the county clerk wants to charge you, whoever administers the records. So that's money that is needlessly spent to produce another digital image with a seal on it, just to satisfy some bureaucrat that you are who you've always been. I mean, this is the biggest racket I can think of.
Why do they need, the last person who went was bitching at me about it. You need your Social Security card. It says right on the Social Security card,
to be used for identification.
Not to be used for identification.
that's another, you know, asinine warping of, you know, contradicting the official documents themselves, using them for purposes they're not used for.
You know, I got my Social Security. I think I took You know where the Social Security office was? And then we'll dash for break and have Nancy in. Social Security office was at, I think, at 76th and Racine or something. And my buddy,
I went to the one at 63rd and Halsted in 1969, I think.
I was,
which was this, you know, archaic, ancient building.
I was way before like that because, it was somewhat before that because I think I got one, even though I didn't need it, to be a caddy.
Oh, yeah, you would have. Yeah,
and and I think we went to the one, we took the 79th Street bus over there, and I think I was like 14. I'm like, geez, I still have it. I never used it ever, and all of a sudden I was cleaning my stuff out. I go, there it is, and then I get this thing from the state, hey, you got to bring your Social Security card. What if I didn't find it? Can you get a new one?
Yeah. I still have mine. It's got my wonky high school signature on it.
Oh, God. SP Futures down 66. NASDAQ Futures down 337. John, I think we have an interesting conversation with Nancy with these interest rates up here. I don't think she's in her best mood, but we'll find out. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
All aboard!
Blowing up like Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Got Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down 65. NASDAQ Futures down 332. Jan on the way in this morning. Just got a quick spin here. The big news is in the interest rate. So I got the 30-year up 1.17 to 4.56. It's 10 years, sorry. The 30-year is well over 5 now, at 5.04. Just remember, every tenth of a point is $35 billion in interest. I don't know if you knew that, Jen, or Nance probably did. That's like a lot of dough for the federal government. It's not a good thing at all. Anyway, do we have Nancy?
We do indeed.
All right, Nance, we're not going to go through the whole mess here. Gold's up like 70 bucks, so gold up, interest rates up, market down. How does that make you feel?
We should. Nancy, there?
Nancy, did you mute yourself?
I'm trying to figure...
There you are. We got you now. We hear you now.
I think there's some technical difficulties on our side.
Uh-oh.
Oh, she's gone. We do still have John, though.
Well, John, we'll have to talk to you. What do you... I mean, there's got to be people that... locked in their mortgage last week, thank God. What do you make of this?
People are going to do it today, might think.
Yeah, well.
Oh, I'm back.
How are you? What's so you celebrating the The interest rate's up. No, you're probably not celebrating the market down, but your big bar of gold you got sitting on the iron table, that's up today. So you got something going for you.
Yeah, I wish I had that big bar of gold.
Well, you know, it's.
I'm going to come and take yours, Tom.
Oh God. There was a time when people say, "What am I going to do with this thing?" Well, now gold's up there, eh? Gold, silver. Pretty soon, people will be digging around for their sterling they got from their mother, and it's in the attic saying, "Hey, we should melt this stuff down."
You're not kidding.
When's the last time you went to anybody's house where they had the sterling out for dinner?
I have not seen that in so many years. My grandmother had some, and then I got rid of it. I mean, that is a pain to keep all that stuff clean. And
oh, God.
Yeah.
It's
that was my job to polish it before Thanksgiving dinner or when we're having family over.
It's yeah.
Me too. The whole day. That disgusting pink stuff you used to have to use?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. When I think about it. Yeah, it absolutely was a job nobody really wanted.
Then you had to count and make sure it's nobody threw one in the garbage. You can't help you.
Really, if I could have subbed it out to another little kid, I would have.
You were the female Tom Sawyer or what?
Oh, God, it was awful.
This painting the fence is really a lot of fun. You guys should try it.
Really? That was one job nobody ever wanted. It seemed like it always, well, let Nancy do it. Oh, God. Well,
my grandmother used to help me. My grandmother was from a generation that it didn't matter what the job was, you just did it. And her motto was, if you even think for a second about, well, she didn't use the word procrastinating, about delaying it, by the time you're thinking about it, you could be done.
Yeah, we used to hear all kinds of stuff like that. But honest to God, that was one crummy job. And that stuff was so...
Oh.
And then they'd be like, well, don't get it on your hands or wash your hands if you get it on your hand. I mean, if it was that toxic, what were we doing?
Putting water I know. It's
pouring in glasses.
Yeah, but the... and then they got some stuff where all you had to do is put it like in a plastic bag and put the stuff in there and it kind of... I can't even imagine what that stuff was made
of.
That
was Turnix.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, God.
Tarnax, yes.
Tarnax. Oh, remember that? Oh, you put it in there. Oh. But really, when you're thinking about it, I mean, they put you put your water in there, and then you'd have the ice, and you'd pour it in. And I'm thinking, yuck, all the stuff that we had on that thing. And then they'd be like, well, wash it. And then they'd be like, well, don't wash it. Well, you had to wash it, but then you had to repolish it again. I mean, really, it just...
Didn't they used to have... sterling silver in the Pullman cars?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And linen tablecloth?
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord. Remember, that was just really
I'll tell
bad.
You what, if there was time travel and you could send me back to 1957, the first thing I'd do is head for LaSalle Street Station to get on the Broadway Limited. Can you imagine how much fun that would have been in a club car and eating in the sterling silver whipping across the country?
Oh, yeah. My dad used to be a mail handler on the Kansas City Super Chief on the Santa Fe between Chicago and Kansas City. So he'd sort mail going to Kansas City and come back, you know, 15 hours later. He did that twice a week for, you know, all the time I was a kid. But he'd say you get off the train in the morning at Dearborn Station coming in from L.A. He didn't ride the train all the way from L.A., just from Kansas City. But there would be people there with the red carpet. They'd roll it out. There'd be all these opera singers, movie stars, politicians who'd be, you know, running down the red carpet into the station with the red caps and all the...
Who piled in the Dearborn was the Grand Trunk and who else?
The Santa Fe.
Santa Fe went in there, okay.
And the Nickel Plate and a couple others that stopped carrying passengers pretty, you know, soon in the 50s. But the Santa Fe was there until they closed the station, so...
Well, there was the one French Lick has that. Well, they just refurbished it all. So it was the biggest suspended dome until the Astrodome was
built. Oh,
the
thing went.
Well, the thing was totally in disrepair when we went to see it in the 70s. But they used to gamble down there in French Lick, and there was a train that left every Friday at like 6:30. It would left the 63rd and Halsted in downtown. Whatever was the Monon line. It was one of those things. And it would race down there. I'm sure all you do is play cards on the train, and you gamble all weekend, and it got you back on Sunday. It was like the junket to Vegas, only it was the French Lick. So, Nance, what is today going to do to the mortgage business? I mean, we came back a little bit here. We're only up 1.24 in the 30, but Everybody that you locked in last week or the week before, they're still good, right?
They're still good. Anybody who's locked is good, and anybody who's not, well, we're going to ride the wave.
Business, you said last time you ran, last week you said it was picking up a little bit. You've been getting some refis as people, well, even if you don't ever want to leave your house after 4 years, stuff happens. People die, they get divorced, they get a new job. I mean, you can't stay there. Most people can't stay there 30 years, right?
They can, but it just doesn't seem to happen. But a lot of people are still saying the same thing. I talked to someone yesterday, and they want to get a new kitchen, but they, you know, or they want to move. Then they don't know if they should just, you know, put the money in their house and get a new kitchen. And it just went back and forth. And when she was done, I said, well, now you know why my job is so yucky. What to tell you? Because at the end, they all decide, well, I'll move if I can have the same payment I have now and get the same rate. Well, neither one of those things are going to happen.
Did you tell them people in hell want ice water or what?
No. I mean, it's just sad. I don't know what you can do. So.
Well, because it is, you would think that if you were to give this test to a whole bunch of people in college, in economics, and say, okay, housing prices are X and the interest rates are X, it's like 3%, and over the next 4 years or 5 years, the housing prices are going to, or the interest rates are going to go from 3 to 7, what's going to happen to housing prices? Most people would say they were coming down, but in fact, they've damn near doubled, right?
I can't say they've doubled, but I mean, they have really gone up.
I'm sorry, 40 to 50%, I'm going to say they're up.
Yeah, I would say that.
Never in the course of economic events have you seen anything like that, have you, Jen?
God, no.
What did the 10-year do, Tim?
10-year is up 108, so it's 4.55.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm going to say your mortgage, if it was 6.6, it's probably 6.74, 75 this morning. Would be my guess, at least that.
Oh, isn't that just lovely?
Yeah, isn't that lovely?
I mean, Nancy, would you say that the fees associated with mortgage lending these days have been fairly stable, you know, leaving interest rates out of it? But the other fees, you know, whatever charges are incurred, I mean, if you spend a point to get a better rate or whatever, are the numbers that are bundled together for a borrower pretty much where they've been for the last 15, 20 years, or have they gone up too?
No, I mean, honestly and truthfully, I could do the fees on a refi were about, I want to say, or the, let's just say the closing costs, you know, like the title and closing, the title costs, the title search, all of that stuff, and then closing at the title company on a refi was, I used in 2006, 2007, 2000, was $450. I don't believe it's anywhere near that now. Appraisals were $225. Appraisals now could be anywhere from $500 to $700. Attorney's fees used to be, at least in Illinois, you don't need an attorney at all for a refi, but for, let's just say, if you were purchasing, was about $400. Now they're between $500 and $700. So, I mean, everything has gone up, you know, right along with it. It's not the fee we charge to underwrite. It's all the other stuff that's crazy. Right.
The doc preparation and the, you know,
yeah, the recording key for the county, I think, is up to,
oh yeah,
180, 100. I mean, it's just all, after COVID, it has just all crazy gone up.
Nancy, you don't have to pay in, Jen, the if you refi your own place, you don't have to do the tax stamp or whatever the hell the thing is, like, you know, the city raised that last year or the year before?
Only if it's a sale, you know, for consideration.
What's that deal? What are those things since I started the conversation? What am I talking about?
Well, it used to be, when I bought this place, I think it was $7.50 a thousand the buyer paid. And that's gone up, and I think it's split now because it has gone up so much that buyer and seller share in the Chicago transfer tax, but I can't tell you because I haven't you know, done a deal in a while in the city of Chicago, but I know it's gone up.
Is that just Chicago or other places have them too?
The local ones, you know, the smaller suburbs that you know depend on this because they don't have tax revenue from businesses or factories or manufacturing. Some of those are really gone up. So,
well, I mean,
percentage wise,
the problem you have in a I'll ask you to. Is it a problem? Is it just something that happens that our politicians don't think about, or are they guilty of sin and maybe should be hit with some water balloons or something? Like when that tax came in, wasn't there over $1 million? Now it's a lot more or something. It's called the high end tax. That got passed, right? Or did it not get passed?
The Brandon Johnson millionaires tax.
Yeah.
No, that was knocked down.
Yeah. Okay, it was knocked down, but even stuff like when Trump in his first term put the limit on your property taxes and other taxes at $10,000, with some justification that we're screwing the blue states or whatever. But he's not the only one. I mean, the people who put in the alternative minimum tax on your income tax, everybody does that kind of stuff with an idea that it's somehow at this level. And even your transfer taxes. Well, now the price of houses are up 40 to 50%, say in the last 5 years. Well, guess who? The taxes are now up 40 to 50%.
Right.
All kinds of people are paying $10,000 on their property tax, right? Way more than anybody ever dreamed in Trump's first term. And I think John, one of you guys probably knows the actual number. When the alternative minimum tax came in, it was. Wasn't there less than 100 people affected? Now everybody has to go through that calculation. I mean, I refuse to believe these guys are that stupid, that it just all happens. Man, I didn't intend that. I think they do intend it. I mean, right? I mean, because they don't index it. It's not like even the CPI is up, say, 20-some percent since 2020. It's not like the, you know, Trump ran in tomorrow and the first thing he did was say, well, that number of 10,000 is now 12. They don't do that, do they? Although I think in the new tax thing, it's going up some, if that thing ever gets passed. But it's stuff I refuse to believe as I get older that they do this by accident. I think it's all done on purpose.
Yeah, I do too.
So, Nance, what if somebody calls you today, what are you going to tell them? Other than you'll do the best you can.
Wait.
You think it's going the other way?
Just wait. I have no idea, Tom, but I would. I just don't know. I mean, we really just don't know. No one does. I mean, I thought it would have been down before now. So, and we just keep seeing. I've never really seen the market and that go up at the same time.
Well,
I haven't seen that in a long time.
This is one of those things where, you know, if you get somebody who says you're using the wrong bolt on that bridge, you really don't want the bridge to fall on somebody's head to prove you're right.
Correct.
I mean, most people, correct, I think, wouldn't be like that. I don't want to see this happen in interest rates, but for the last 20-some years, certainly the last 15, I might as well be peeing in Lake Michigan as to tell people the Fed does not control long-term rates over the long term. They can control short-term rates, but the long-term rates have an anticipated inflation component in there that they can't deal with. They can make the real rate of interest, which should be 2.5%, if they pour money into the system, they can get that down to 1.5 or 0 like they did. But the long-term rates, if people think that's all it's going to do is create inflation, it's going to make the 30-year rate go up, not down. And I've been kind of wrong on this for a long time because they kept putting so much money in, they kind of overwhelmed the whole thing. But right now, you know, Trump's bitching at this guy to lower rates by 0.25% or a half. It's not going to matter because right now people are sitting there going, this inflation is backed, it's back in spades, and oh, by the way, I'm not giving anybody any money for 30 years for 2% anymore. Those people are imbeciles, and I'm not going to do it again. That's where I think we're at. You guys think I'm nuts or for that or other reasons?
Go ahead, John.
No, you go ahead. That's
I just feel that the banks have already taken care of that because on those home equity lines of credit, I never saw a floor until after these 2% rates came in. And after that, anyone that got a new home equity line of credit, they couldn't do anything about the existing. But those are only balloons. So when they're up, they after that, everyone is getting a floor now. And the floor is set, I think, around 4.5%. Meaning no matter what the interest rates do, they will get 4.5% on any amount of money that you borrow on your home.
So the...
It'll never go below 4.5.
So these are flexible, but... Well, didn't some, though, on the good side, Nance, when rates ran up many years ago, couldn't they only go up like 0.5% a year or something? So people did okay on the, on those, right?
No, well, on the home equity line of credits, that's just based on prime. So people were, you know, paying 1.25% interest. I mean, it was really crazy. So now on those that particular product, the banks took care of. Okay. Now, on, they got rid of the LIBOR, so obviously that didn't work, right? Because we don't even have those anymore. Now we have these SOFI ARMs, and the LIBORs were based in Europe, so they got rid of that. And so I think some of what you're saying is probably true on these, on some of the mortgage products. That's probably true. That's why I say I don't know if we'll ever see the twos and threes again. I mean, a 30-year fixed at that rate, I don't know.
Well, Audrey was... the reason why I was overhearing is because she made me turn the ball game down. Was talking to a new client was kind of hemming and hawing as to whether they should do a little fix-up on their place before they put it on the market. Mm-hmm. And Aud was telling them that a lot of the new buyers now... They have to have the thing in move-in condition, I mean, or they want it in move-in condition. And so if it's, you know, if the bathroom doesn't work, you're probably going to do better fixing it, right? Because they don't, and you know the implication is, you know, depending on, you know, mole farts, is that young people don't want to do any work, and maybe that's part of it, but I think from listening to you and Audrey, it's more than that. When people get into my house, even when you work in your magic, and by the way, Nance is about as good as I've ever seen, you work your magic, most of the people you plunk in a house, not the older people that pay cash and that kind of stuff, most of the people can't walk in the first day, walk to the bank and say, we need 40 grand for the kitchen and the bathroom. They're on the edge. It better be move in for a while, right?
Absolutely, and that is the number one thing I ask about and kind of counsel on. I tell them this isn't, you can't, you know, what is it you don't like about this house, right? Because if you're going to, let's say you do have 20% down, let's just assume you did, and you're going to have to, you know, the woman says, well, first thing I have to do is, you know, we're going to have to paint and rip out the carpeting. That's usually the first thing that happens, okay? And I say, okay, how are you going to pay for this? They, you know, they say, well, you know, we'll pay it over time. We get one of those 0% cards or whatever. I tell them, no, then just put less down. Take the PMI and take, because those are the things you really need to pay cash for.
Yeah.
You don't need 20, you know, credit cards. I mean, some of them are 36% interest. Who needs that?
Yeah, I can't even. That's crazy. The mob didn't charge that much.
No.
Right. So you're trying to counsel them in the beginning, saying, if you really can't afford this, because they all say, oh, we have kids and we got to get that carpeting out of there, and you know he can do it himself. It's not going to be that much money. Believe me, it adds up. I mean, it's always the customer's decision, but it isn't like I didn't tell them up front, this is going to cost you more than what you think. Like, do you really want to do this?
And how soon can you go from closing where you get them in there and all of a sudden the people go like the next week to the bank for the loan to, you know, to fix the kitchen? I mean,
they can't go to the bank the next week for the loan to fix up the kitchen. That's what I'm trying to tell them. I mean, you can't, it just doesn't work that way. We used to do that. We used to give them a line of credit right behind it to fix it up. And if you're going to do that, you should just do it right out of the gate. But now those are the line, you know, it is linked to Prime, and I think a lot of the line of credits are, there's an, some have introductory rates of like, you know, five or six. The cheapest one, I just got a home equity line of credit. The cheapest one I could find, I found one for 4.99, and then I found one for 6.74% or something like that. But the home equity line of credit I had before I went out was 8.25 or 8.75. Wow. And then I called my brother and I said, "What is your home equity line of credit? I'll use yours." And he's like, "It's 9.25. I was like, "Oh my God, that's insane."
That's pretty scary.
I mean, it's not that easy to just, you can't even fathom these numbers, right? I mean, 9% for a line of credit, really? But that's better than the 36 on the credit card.
Yeah, it's a
23, or, you know, if you can even find one. But everybody thinks the 0% is really great, and it is, unless you don't make the pay it off when that term is up, because then it goes retro back to the day you took it out.
Well, the reason why people are giving you the 0% is they know the percentage is better than anybody else of how many people don't pay it off by the end.
Well, and how many people don't realize it retros back to day right. one.
Now, when you get one from, like I get them in the mail all the time from credit cards because I don't carry a balance, so they're dying to get me to have a balance, but you can get one from Discover or U.S. Bank or something, and they just charge you from that day. They don't retro it. But you're saying some of them do.
If there's an intro rate, you know.
Yeah, and they do. Yeah, but go ahead.
No, you'll be stuck going back, you know, if you exceed the period when the introductory rate works, like 12 months or whatever, in month 13, you owe it on the whole thing. So,
really, because on the stuff I get from Discover, I'm not, this is not a commercial for them, but it's I could swear it says if you don't do it in the eight, it's not that long, it's like 12 months or something. At that time, if you haven't paid off, your regular rate applies going forward. There's no retro on that.
Some of them I've seen that, but and Discover, like personal loans or home equity loans, where they've shaved that down for people to kind of lure you in. So yeah, there are ways they can tweak it, but generally, I mean, like financing projects for like windows or, you know, big, you know, that you don't get any wiggle room on that.
Also, if you go to Joe's Windows, no payment for. No interest rates for a year. If you don't pay them, and then it comes back, or some of them, you don't have to pay them at all, anything for a year, right? And then if you don't pay them, it all goes back.
Right, and they can for even multiple years too. But eventually, I mean, they've all got that unwind provision that if you exceed the period of that this introductory rate applies to, then you get nothing for you owe it on the entire balance. So.
And even if you didn't, I'm like, I did have someone call me last week and say that, well, it just needs new windows, and we were thinking that'd be about $20,000. And I'm like, try 40. The average price for windows now, and I went and checked it out, is that at a window and door store. I mean, I didn't just, you know, call somebody and say, I said, just in an average, like a tri-level, how much would windows be to replace them all? And he said an easy $40,000.
That's a...
I said, do you have payment plans? And he said, no, but I wish we did.
Yikes.
Yeah, it'd be more money. They'd make more money there, and they wouldn't have windows.
Yeah.
So I think, and that's why I have these conversations with people, because I don't want them to be caught off guard. It's okay if you buy the home, if you realize what you're in for, right?
Well, it's actually, it's not going to come as a huge shock to you, Nance, but I got some guys, right? And I've replaced most of the windows in my place, and we usually get them custom made by this place that, remember the guys that were on Goose Island, Jen? And,
yeah.
And they closed, and there was a big demonstration. Well, some of them moved and opened up a new place way west on like 39th Street, I think. So I've got somebody who uses them and goes to them for the estimates, and they do a nice job. But, you know, they're not going to do wood or anything like that. But, it's the nitrogen inside and the whole bit. And I've had replaced from time to time all the picture windows and stuff in the building I'm in. So they have one left. And I went out there, and I think the other two or three were 1,000, 1,200. And then, you know, I had to go get them. I had a big truck and everything. and my guys put them in. And they charged me, you know, for two guys for a day, it was $800 or something, which is pretty good. I don't know what they would charge now. Well, the last one, instead of being $1,100, was like $2,000. And I go, hey, it was only like 2 years ago. What's going on? That's what the new price is. Okay, then. Same thing. I mean, I still think for the whole front picture window, it would be a pretty good deal to get that all in for less than 3G. But 5 years ago, it would have been $1,800 all in. You know, that's a big difference.
That's what I try and do is to tell people, hey, look, it's fine if you buy this, but have your expectations met and realize this is really what it's going to cost. So when you do this, please make sure you have enough money to get the absolute have-tos. Like you said, you don't want the baby crawling around in carpeting because of this, that, and the next thing. One guy told me, he said, well, the floors are asbestos. I'm like, whoa!
Yeah, it's pretty scary. But so, Nance, right now, what do you think, even today with this move-up, what do you think the rates are, and how does somebody find you?
They can call me at 708-341-9601. That's 708-341-9601. I have no idea, Tom, what's going to happen. I keep saying they got to come back down, but, I mean, who really knows? I have someone building, and I talked to him on Friday, and I said, boy, I said, I'm beginning to think maybe we should just lock and be done. And he said, you know, he goes, it kind of is what it is. And I said, so is your idea to float until, like, towards the end? And he said, that's my thinking. And then I said, and then you're going to refinance if the rates fall? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, then, okay. But no one is thinking that they're not going to fall. Everyone's in the boat where no matter what I do, the rates will fall. I actually had someone tell me, it really just doesn't matter because Trump is going to make these rates go back down to 3-4% again. And see, I don't know what to say to that because yes, that could be true, but to bank your life on it? I don't know.
Every time somebody says something like this, my hand wants to shake. Because Robin and I did a condominium refurbishment up on Lakeshore Drive way back in the day. And she was able to, because she knew everybody at the bank, instead of us getting a mortgage, we ended up getting a bridge loan. And we got a bridge loan, I think, in November. I think my dates are right. 8.5%. By the time we sold it in May, they were 14.
Yeah.
So when everybody says they can only go down from here, in Trumpy we trusty, I just, if I had hair on the back of my neck, it would be standing straight out. I mean, just.
Let me answer, John. What do you think the rates are going to do?
I think they're going to inch up.
So do you ever think they're coming back down?
No, and maybe it's a good thing. They should never have gone down the way they did for so long. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're in this mess, is that people became, you know, used to it in a way that they just, you know, money was too cheap, if anything.
Here's a fresh perspective from somebody who isn't, I'm saying kind of not in that game. You know, his expectations are okay. And you're saying that you don't even think they're going to come back down.
No, not right away, I don't think.
They were
not as fast as people want, that's for sure.
Yeah, but let's say they did come down. What do you think they're going to go down to? I mean, you think they can get back down to twos and threes? Do you think
No, never. I don't think ever again.
No. Okay. Do you think I don't even know if they'll get back down to five.
No. That would be okay. That wouldn't be unusual. It was such a crazy situation for what, a decade or more.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe, you know, things. Well, I can see now why so many things are screwed up. It's because of that.
When some people could borrow less than the inflation rate, look what it did to some incredible prices. Baseball teams, football teams.
Right.
You know, but not everybody could borrow there. That's the problem.
Right.
I'm going to say that the mortgage rate, plus or minus a half a buck, is 6%. People should get 3% of their money in the bank. The spread should be 3. Should pay for the building, the people, the Little League jerseys. That's the way it was with savings and loans for 3 decades. I don't see how you get below 6, do you? I mean,
Okay, but this is having a reasonable, logical conversation with what's happened and somewhat what happened in the past, what you think could happen going forward. This 2-3% has now caused all this chaos today. So we're all saying, we're having a logical meeting of the minds that says, well, if the rates wind up somewhere between 5 and 7, that would actually be a good thing.
I think it would be normal.
Yeah.
Right. And what I'm getting from people is, you know, well, Trump is going to get it done. And I'm not bashing Trump. I'm just saying you just can't count on one man to... How can you believe that just one man can change all this?
Well, the only way you should get down to 2.5% is if that's the real rate of interest, okay? You have to pay somebody for using their money, right? People forgot that for a while. Plus, do you really think the inflationary expectations is going to be zero? That's what it would take for it to be a 2.5% rate, right?
Right.
And I don't see either of those happening.
With the run-up in prices that the low interest rates allowed, could you imagine now if we were back at 2%, given where some of these houses have plateaued, and they go up more? I mean, this is gonna, the market will be completely out of sight for people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would happen, but you would see a massive amount of refinancing, home improvement, and then moving going on. So that would stimulate the economy again big time.
Yeah.
But now there's this lull where people are getting laid off. That's starting again. People are fearing that they're going to get laid off. Talked this weekend to people, they say they're going to have to all go back to work down, you know, wherever they work. That's coming back now. I just don't see where it's going to be. I'm saying it's not going to be easy. And between the beliefs that people have and the reality of what's going to happen, that could be two totally different things.
I agree with you, Nance. We got a dash. The good thing is the Pope might say mass in White Sox Park and the Sox will be better.
Oh, now you're really dreaming. And if he comes, I'm going to do Chicago to him and get him to go to the with the Bears.
I think it's going to take at least a novena. Do they even have those anymore?
Oh, sure. They still have.
Really? I'd never been on one. Well, I never went to one of those. But
Yeah, we had them at St. Felicitas. It's Our Lady of Perpetual Help. You know, novena, you know, Stations of the Cross, a benediction at the beginning of the whole thing. You know.
Oh, God.
We always had novenas on Fridays, didn't we, at 3 o'clock? Or
yeah, but
3:30?
Weren't there some that you went somewhere for like the weekend and stuff? The extended ones?
Well, the 9-day, the novena was like a 9-day, you know, ritual of routine of prayers, and you got, you know, I think you used to get some kind of a certificate of completion, as I recall, when you finished the novena.
Could you drink
I think it was nine consecutive days or something.
Could you drink during a novena?
Well,
are you kidding me?
The priest did.
They only had wine. That doesn't count.
Hey, maybe this weekend, guys. 3 days. Maybe we can get together. All right.
John, coming or
yes,
are you in?
I got wheels. I got wheels then.
Oh, God. All right. SP Futures down 62. NASDAQ Futures down 311. Right about where we were when we came in. Again, a lot of this was already done Friday night if you watch the futures. So the futures were already down 40 points after the close, so we're really only down about 20 cents then. So don't look at the cash. Look at the futures close Friday. I know it's a little complicated, but that's why you listen to Stocks and Jocks. Back tomorrow.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.
Report back to me when it makes sense.